Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to the one and only Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, one thing we didn't talk about on yesterday's show in the midst of discussing everything about that down-to-the-wire game at Heinz Field against the Steelers was during pregame, a few hours before kickoff, Aaron Rodgers was out there on the turf at Heinz Field going through what we learned was a planned rehab session in terms of throwing the football with the trainers, strength and conditioning staff. This is all part of his rehab process, and I don't know what you thought, but I thought he looked awfully good.
He looked really good considering the number one thing you always hear about a collarbone injury and the throwing shoulder is the arm strength, and you know potentially having decreased arm strength. Aaron Rodgers looked as good as he ever did in that assignment, and it was funny. You and I were doing our live stream pregame show,
yeah.
I think you could call, and Duke Bobber and Ryan Hartwig, who were you know the guys working our stuff behind the scenes, were just kind of like in awe a little bit, and our backs were to everything that was going on.
Yeah, we couldn't see what was going on.
So, like, I don't know what – I was getting distracted. I was getting upset. I didn't know exactly what was going on behind me. They were distracting me. And as it turns out, it was, you know, Rodgers being Aaron Rodgers out there. And I'll say this. We're going to have to see how this season plays out, whether or not Rodgers' return is back in the cards. Whatever the case may be, I think it is a really positive sign 1 month, a little over a month away from surgery, that he's – not only out there and doing that, but throwing it the way he was.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to clarify for the fans, the logistics of this injured reserve situation and returning from IR, Aaron Rodgers was officially put on injured reserve on October 20th, which was the Friday after the collarbone injury in Minnesota. In order to, the rules for returning from injured reserve, you have to miss a minimum of 6 weeks of practice and a minimum of 8 weeks of games. So Rodgers missing 6 weeks of practice runs out this Friday. Yeah. So technically, he would be eligible to return to practice this Saturday, which would be the Packers' final practice before the Tampa Bay game. Now, we heard from Mike McCarthy that there hasn't been any date set in terms of Rodgers' return to practice. That's not something that's on the radar right now. He's going through a very regimented, I think Mike McCarthy used the word segmented, rehab process in terms of the arm strength, the health of the shoulder, all of that. So there's been no date set for his return to practice. The first game he would be eligible to play in would be the Carolina game in Week 15, as we've talked about on the show. So still a long way to go, no official timetable on things. And as Rodgers said when he spoke to the media right after the surgery, he did indicate that whether or not the Packers are still in the playoff hunt could matter as well in terms of whether he comes back to play or not. Now, that's something that possibly could change too, because that was a statement that was made several weeks ago. But that's what we know at this point.
Yeah, and again, there's so many different variables involved with that. But as you said, you definitely have to consider that aspect of it too, because Aaron Rodgers, one of the things that makes him Aaron Rodgers is that offseason preparation of his. And we've talked about that now for the last 3 or 4 years, the way he's transitioned his workouts and his prep with, you know, him getting into his 30s now and into that, as he says, that second back nine of his career. You don't want to disrupt that if there's nothing to play for. So we're going to have to see exactly how that all, you know, pans out. That being said, the fact that he is able to do this, and we'll see exactly what happens. I guess we really won't see what happens on Saturday, whether or not he would practice, although they would have to actually show that in the transaction report, I believe, if he does return.
Right. It just wouldn't be it's not a practice that's open to the media.
Right. Yeah. Whatever the case may be, you don't have to rush that part of it. The biggest thing would be he's eligible no matter what for the Carolina game. So if they feel he's healthy enough to go, it's not impacted about him needing 2 weeks. It's just that window is there for him to get that on-field work, if it, you know, would happen to fit within his schedule.
Yeah, so just something we have to see as to how this is going to play out over the next couple of weeks. Now, another injury update that we got from Mike McCarthy is regarding rookie running back Aaron Jones, who injured his knee in Chicago, has missed the last two games. And McCarthy didn't make any promises here, but he said there's a possible trial return to practice for Jones this week on Wednesday. He's been going through some rehab, and he may transition at some point this week in practice from rehab to the actual practice field. So another thing to keep an eye on, because the Packers really the last two games, you know, in part because of Devontae Mays and the fumbles, they've gone with just Jamal Williams as the right. primary back. I believe I counted, added it up, he's touched the ball 47 times over the last two games if you count the rushing attempts and the pass catches. So the idea of getting Aaron Jones back and then maybe – and then Ty Montgomery could be in the mix as well. We don't know where he is with his rib injury. But thinking of Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams as a kind of a 1-2 punch, a rookie backfield here, that's something that may be developing in the near future.
Yeah, Jones said when he talked to the media, I think that was over a week ago now, he actually did sprain his MCL once in college as well and then missed ended up being 3 weeks total, two games and a bye week.
Okay.
So this would put him on that kind of trajectory for all you pre-med students out there. You know, MCLs, those don't require surgery oftentimes. They can heal on their own. The scar tissue adds up. It allows the player to get back out there. So long-term-wise, there isn't a big concern with it. It's just kind of working through this. It's a shame that it happened. I mean, every injury sucks. I'm not going to say it doesn't for any player, but Jones was just so – he was running so red hot at that point in time. And I've said this a couple times. One of the big reasons in 2013 they were able to get on that run was Eddie Lacy. Now, Eddie Lacy was banged up too with that high ankle sprain that season, but they had that one back and they really rode him. Jamal Williams has done a phenomenal job, but I do wonder if you could have just had, you know, one or two backs running with Brett Hundley throughout this whole time, how it might have been able to help things, because there has really been a lot of shuffling going on there at that position.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have you know, being able to put some fresh legs into the game at different times, which I think the idea with this multifaceted backfield, but because of injuries and other issues, it hasn't really worked out that way. But we've got to get to a break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, an issue I want to go back to from the Sunday night game in Pittsburgh, late in the fourth quarter, something that it's generating a lot of discussion amongst the fan base. We're seeing a lot of submissions to our insider inbox about it, people asking questions. And I'm talking about the helmet-to-helmet hit on T.J. Watt's sack of Brett Hundley with just over a minute to go. The Packers had the ball. Game was tied. Green Bay was back inside its own 20-yard line. And here's my question for you, because we're hearing and reading about a lot of different scenarios here. Did they just flat-out miss this helmet-to-helmet hit, what should have been a 15-yard penalty? Or did they not throw the flag because Brett Hundley had tucked the ball, was a runner, and was therefore not protected, the head, so to speak, was not protected in the same way that it is if he's in the pocket in a throwing posture? What are your thoughts on where this is right now?
Well, first off, I like the hard-hitting questions here, Michael. This is good. You know I'm a big UFC fan, right?
Yes.
MMA. You may agree with it, you may not agree with it, but there's something in mixed martial arts referring to turtling up, which is basically if you're I'm going to use the example of you beating me up because that makes more sense. You're beating me up. I begin turtling up. At that point, if I'm not showing any advancement of position, the referee comes in and stops the fight.
Okay.
When I go back and I watch this play, I would say a good dozen times. You and I even watched it a couple times together. To me, Brett Hundley is turtling up on that play.
Okay.
He is not trying to advance the football. He's literally just trying to save himself there. I don't know whether or not they missed a call there. I don't know enough about the rule book to understand that. But I will say, if we're at a point in the National Football League where a quarterback trying to defend himself and not advance the football makes him susceptible to a helmet-to-helmet hit, we're not doing player safety right.
Yep.
So for that to not get called, I don't know. We're going to find out later this week. Pay attention on Friday to Twitter. They'll have all the NFL fines that day. If Watt gets fined, we're going to get our answer.
Yeah, that's true.
But as far as the game is concerned, Mike McCarthy made it very clear afterwards he felt like it had a big impact. He hit. I don't think T.J. Watt was trying to be malicious, but it did seem somewhat reckless the way he came in. Now, mind you, he wasn't originally a pass rusher. He came in on a delayed blitz after he was dropped back in coverage. So things happen quickly. It's tough to adjust, but Helmet to helmet is helmet to helmet. I think we've seen a lot of calls in the NFL that were less than that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I'm with you on a lot of the things that you said, particularly that we're going to find out exactly what the league thinks
Absolutely.
About this when later in the week, if we finding out if T.J. Watt gets fined or not. What I will say, the more I've watched this replay, I think the reason the flag wasn't thrown is because Hundley had tucked the ball and started to run. Yeah. I think that's why Ed Hockley, and this is Ed Hockley's call.
Right.
The referee is the one in the offensive backfield. He's got the quarterback. The quarterback is his job. All those other guys are watching the offensive lineman for the holding and the defensive lineman, and then the guys in the back are watching for the pass interference and illegal contact and all that kind of stuff. That's the referee's call. That's Ed Hockley's call. I think he didn't throw the flag because Hundley had tucked the ball and started to run. So the head protection goes away in the sense that Hundley becomes a runner. But your point about the fact that Hundley was giving himself up, it was a clear helmet-to-helmet hit. I mean, Hundley probably should have been checked medically if we are doing the player safety thing right.
Yeah.
That also didn't happen. And I've said this in Insider Inbox many times, and I said it again in Monday's column, and that I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. I just don't think you can really take the league totally seriously about this player safety stuff if you're not going to allow replay to get these calls
yeah.
correct on the
right.
field. Yes, a fine later on can help to change the player behavior. But what's the point if certain ones are going to get called and have an impact on the game
yeah.
and other ones are not going to get called and the fine is later? Yes, you can impact the player behavior, but some are impacting the outcome of a game and some are not.
Yeah.
The difference in this game, it's either second and 16 on the 12-yard line or it's first and 10 on the 33
right.
with a minute to go. A huge difference in whether or not the flag is thrown.
Yeah, so this is why I think, again, I'm not going to sit here and comment on whether or not the flag should have been thrown, because honestly, Mike, I'm just not educated enough to do that. What I will say is let's say there is a fine this week. Well, let's say there isn't a fine this week. I just think once the season's over, we always talk about areas of emphasis, things the league needs to look at. This is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not easy to be a pass rusher. I'm not trying to make it sound like it is. We saw what happened with Dean Lowry a week ago where his hand just ends up getting a little too far up and ends up hitting the quarterback in the helmet, and he gets flagged
yeah,
for
15
it.
Yards.
So
yep.
it's those kind of things where it's like, okay, so where's the subjectiveness here? Where's the line that you're drawing in the sand? I don't know. I really don't. So I will be a very interested party this week to see how the league reacts
yeah,
to it.
Because your point about the fact that Hundley was turtling up and not wanting to advance the ball any farther, in essence, he made himself a defenseless player.
Right.
You have all these protections for defenseless receivers down
exactly.
the field and all that kind of stuff. You don't have the protections for the helmet for a runner, a guy who's running the ball. You know, the running back and a tackler can collide helmet to helmet. That's not a penalty.
Right.
So there's all these gray areas as to exactly what's going on. And again, to my point, that's where I think if the league really wants to get this stuff right, and I'm not saying I want games to be 3.5-4 hours long, but I think you got to start letting them look at the replay, look at what's happening, and make sure that all these player safety calls are called correctly.
I agree, because it's changing the game and it's changing outcomes of games too.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got to get to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, another bit of news, small piece of news, I guess you might say, from Mike McCarthy's Monday news conference. He was asked about Jason Spriggs, who made his first NFL start at right tackle. Was somewhat of a surprise, I think, to you and me and to others. We thought, as long as Justin McCray was healthy, that McCray was potentially going to hold down that right tackle spot. But the Packers went with Spriggs. And he held his own, played a pretty solid game. His matchup, for the most part, in the pass rush was against Bud Dupree, the outside linebacker. He also had several snaps against Stephon Tuitt, your classic five-tech defensive end in that 3-4 alignment for the Steelers. Not a perfect game by any means for Jason Spriggs, but he definitely held his own. And Mike McCarthy said it sounds like they're going to stick with Jason Spriggs at right tackle here moving forward for the rest of this season.
And it makes sense, Mike. Packers need to have some more options behind that starting offensive line. As great as Justin McCray is, and he's done a phenomenal job this year
yes.
in terms of how he's stepped in at multiple positions, you really don't want to find yourself in a position where he's the backup at five spots, in addition to starting at right tackle. Yeah. So I think if you look at this past week, too, it makes a lot of sense because Moore was asked of McCray. He was actually taking reps at center this week with Corey Linsley dealing with the back issue. So that opened up more room, more starts, more snaps for Justin Jason Spriggs. My goodness.
There you go.
Michael. At right tackle. And I had a chance to ask and talk with Jari Evans a little bit about this after the game. He was ready for it. He knew that was going to be the plan. Spriggs said, I think he found out for sure on Friday or Saturday, I believe it was, that he was going to get the start at right tackle. But Evans was ready for it. It's actually, I think, the fourth different guy Evans has lined up next to this year. But he said it, too. I mean, Spriggs did a great job of going in there, battling, competing, and the communication between those guys was pretty good. So, hey, they put a second-round draft pick in this guy a year ago.
Traded up for him.
Yep. They feel like he's a future, you know, starter, contributor at that tackle position. I mean, right now, without Brian Bulaga, not sure what the forecast is going to be like for him this offseason, I think it makes total sense to go this direction.
That's what I was going to say, too, is that with Bulaga having the season-ending knee injury, and I don't want to speculate on his timetable and whatnot, but based on what we know about these types of knee injuries, there's a very good chance that Brian Bulaga is not ready for the start of the 2018 season. So this is an opportunity here for Jason Spriggs to potentially make himself the front runner to begin 2018 as the right tackle. And as I said, we don't know what's going to happen with Bulaga and his recovery and what the future holds for him as a veteran and a Pro Bowl caliber player. But this is a huge opportunity for Jason Spriggs. Kyle Murphy will also potentially be in that mix, but he will be coming off of a season-ending injury as well. Now, his injury occurred a lot sooner than Bulaga's, so his prospects for training camp for next summer would seem to be better on paper than Bulaga's in terms of being ready. But for right now, it's Spriggs and his chance to show that he can try to lock down that spot for a while.
Yeah, timing is so tricky for Bulaga there because although he has a wealth of experience and certainly been a staple, a stalwart at that spot for a number of years.
And he's come back from an injury like this before.
But the timing is what makes it the most tricky, just depending on how much work he can get during the offseason program, what the plan will be for him there. From Spriggs' perspective, this is a good chance for him to get some work. I mean, it's really been tough for him to get work with how durable those two guys were during his rookie season for the most part. So without Kyle Murphy there, with them being impacted as much as they have been by injuries at that tackle position, he has 5 weeks to show what he can do, and I think that was a good building block against a really formidable defensive front from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, and I took a look at the offensive game film, and for those who like my What You Might Have Missed video feature that's on the website, I focused it on about a half dozen snaps of Jason Spriggs from the game against Pittsburgh. But I was really impressed with what he did in the pass protection aspect against Bud Dupree, a guy who came into the game with four sacks on the season, was one of those four Steelers with four or more sacks on that defensive front. And Stephon Tuitt, who's had some injury issues this year, but Stephon Tuitt is no slouch. And on some running plays, Jason Spriggs did the job there as well. So I was pretty impressed. I hope it's something that's a building block for him going forward.
Yeah, definitely can be. It's been for a lot of those young tackles, even looking at David Bakhtiari a number of years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, final segment. I know we touched on this yesterday at the end of the show, and it's worth revisiting. Mike McCarthy was asked about it as well, just in terms of where the Packers stand here at 5-6. And Mike McCarthy kept it pretty simple. If you don't get to 10 wins, there's really not a lot to talk about in terms of playoff scenarios and the playoff picture. The Packers are at 5, and they've got 5 games left. The math is pretty easy.
Yeah, they need to win them out. They need to take care of business here. This is a great opportunity, as I also said yesterday, to try to start a run here. A very winnable game at home against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You cannot drop a fourth straight one at home. Week after that, you're going to Cleveland, and we know the story in Cleveland right now.
Right.
So if you can pick up these two victories, build some momentum going into Carolina in those two NFC North games at the end of the season, That's the catalyst here. That's the path. That's what they need to accomplish. That being said, that's looking ahead. And from the Packers' perspective, from Mike McCarthy's perspective, this really boils down to win number 6. Just like when they beat the Chicago Bears, it was about win number 5.
Yep.
They look at that 10-win mark as the metric, as the standard. That's what
benchmark.
They need to attain to.
Yep.
And to get there, you need to get number 6 this weekend.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And as I said to you when we were talking about it before the show, you have to look at this, you know, like a baseball team that falls behind 6-0 in the 5th inning.
Right.
You can't hit a 6-run homer. All you can do is chip away. The Packers can't get to 10 wins this week. They can't get to 10 wins next week. So the old adage, the old cliche of one game at a time, one week at a time, that's all you can do. All you can do is chip away at this and try to make that climb to 10 wins. And the bottom line is there is no more margin for error, because a 7th loss on the ledger pretty much ends the season, because it may not be mathematically completely eliminated at 7 losses. But realistically, right now, there are 7 teams in the NFC with 7 or more wins.
Yeah.
The Packers have 5. There are only 6 playoff spots. So the idea of trying to get into the playoffs with only 9 wins just is not realistic at all. So the margin for error is gone.
Well, and you're just leaving so much up to the rest of the league. And the way that the NFC has played this year, the number of teams that are competing for division titles now with 6, 7, 8 wins, there's a ton of them. So, I mean, that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think. That's why you need to take care of business. That's why you need to get this win this weekend and start that run.
Yeah, it's got to start this weekend, absolutely. With that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.